This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 493, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
One third live from San Diego.
Don't care if you're angry. I'm getting out. Now nothing ever shames me. I'm going out. I don't care if you're angry. I should have thought things through. I'm holding out.
Well, hello. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. This is episode 493. That number. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
So he's our
man
San
on
Diego.
The scene.
And I apologize today for the sound quality because right before the show, all my equipment broke. And that's fun. And also, I apologize if I say anything stupid because I haven't slept much. And I may or may not be hungover. So there you go.
I've been enough. Sick. So, Ron, it's on you. And let's be honest, you're rusty. We are iFanboy. We like comics. Every week we read our stack of comics. One of us picks the one that's their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. Then we talk about that book. We talk about other books from the week, some other stuff, maybe read some listener email. The goal here, entertainment. This is a spoiler heavy filled process we're going through. So if you don't want to know what happens to the books, you shouldn't be listening. There it is, plain as that. Watch your butts. Or hold on to your butts. This week, Connor, you had the pick. I by the way, impressive.
So I had 10 books this week. It was a nice light week, which you like to see when you have the pick because you got to read a lot of books. And then I get a text from Josh saying, make sure you don't miss 1872 number one. And I was like, son of a bitch.
He literally said book. That.
So I read it and I was like, son of a bitch.
I think he might have told me to go something myself. Let's just check the record. Let's see. So, Connor. Nope. Okay, fine, jerk. That's
so much more polite. So yeah. 1872 number one is a Secret Wars Battle World book, and I haven't really been reading very many of these, but the ones I have been reading are usually the ones that one of you recommends, like the Garth Ennis one. And this is the Jerry Duggan, Kit, Nick Varela, and Lee Lowridge, Clint Cowles book that takes place in the Western world of Marvel, and why not? Who cares?
Well, we're going to get back to this concept afterward. Talk about the book, and then we're going to talk about the overall thing.
And it was super
Why
fun.
Why not? Who cares? That's very close to what I have to say.
So, I mean, this is sort of a book written specifically for Josh and I. I mean, I assume they had bigger audience in mind.
I just want to say, A, the cover totally got me, but after all of the other ones that I read, I was like, I don't want to read this. And then I saw Jerry Duggan, and I thought, I like his work. All right, I'll try it. I was like, oh, shit. Connor's not going to read this unless I tell him.
So this is in this Western world, it's a town of Timely, as you will know, is the name of Marvel before it was Marvel. Sheriff Steve Rogers is trying to keep the peace, and drunken Tony Stark spends a lot of time at the saloon, and Bruce Banner runs the apothecary, and there's trouble in town with Mayor Fisk, who's corrupt. And it was just This is the kind of Elseworlds-y story that I love, taking your familiar characters, dropping them into an unfamiliar setting, but having them still reveal themselves to be who they are, no matter what.
And totally committed to the Western format, not superheroes in Westerns. Nobody appears to have any superpowers.
It wasn't like somebody started flying or
right,
at any
it's,
point.
It wasn't a man out of time. It was literally just these characters' personalities in these roles. But
and it's nice to see Steve Rogers because we don't get to see him anymore.
Yeah,
because he's not cool apparently. And he's the perfect sheriff, and not just wearing the star shield like his star badge like his shield, but he's a law and order guy, and he's trying his best to be a good guy and not lose control of this town, which is being overrun by corruption. And I loved the Tony Stark bit where you think Tony Stark's going to become his sort of Doc Holliday. Mm-hmm. His sidekick, but he's really more concerned with drinking, including the hidden gun release that he had that now holds a flask instead of a gun. I love that the art was wonderful.
Yeah,
the art was great. Yeah.
So you read this, Rana? You're not a Western guy.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not as much of a Western guy as you guys. I can enjoy a good Western every now and then. But honestly, what got me immediately upon reading this, and I don't know if it got you guys as quickly as well, but this identifies a failing of the other Battleworld books, is that it opens up with a map of Timely.
Yes.
And
it was great.
I sat there and pored over that map for about 10 minutes, looking where everybody, like, every one of these things should have a map of the geography that they're working with. That's such an easy thing to do, and they nailed it with this one because it was, you know, playing to all the Western stereotypes and had all the characters and the people, even people who aren't in the story, they're on the map. You know, right. It shows that they exist. In two pages, they created a world that immediately caught me up and I was ready to go into.
And the Kirby River's been dammed. I don't know if that's a metaphor or not. But, I think a couple of the other ones have maps. The Manhattan.
I gotta say, that's not a thing. I looked at the map; it's fine, but I forgot about it. It wasn't that. It was that this one actually engaged me, whereas all the other ones, really, I mean, most of them that I started with in five pages, like, I don't want to read this. I don't care.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know that if I was thinking before, it doesn't matter because it's just going to be over in a little bit, or it's not compelling. But I didn't care about that with this. I wanted to read it, and a lot of the ones I didn't want to read.
Well, the thing is, it's fun that it's the familiar characters, but even if you changed all their names, it would still have been a good Western story.
Yeah, it was totally a straight up Western, which was I was like, oh, they're really, the conventions of that were all, you know, spot on, which I think was helpful. Too. I don't know what it was, but I've tried to read a bunch of these, and I just, like, they didn't grab me in any way. So this was just fun. I think between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers, that really did it, and Banner, like, those characters were a lot of fun to read.
Right. Banner was great. And you know, it's a traditional Western story, right? So as we said, the Kirby River's been dammed by the Roxxon Corporation to get water for their silver mine concern, which I always love that phrase. And so there's an Indian, is it, who's his character?
Red Wolf.
Red Wolf, he goes to blow up the dam because it's starving out his people, and it's also, the town has got no more water, and so he gets caught by Mayor Wilson Fisk Stuggs, who works for the governor, who works for Roxxon, who dammed up the mine, dammed up the river.
Am I not wrong, but this is the exact same plot as Blazing Saddles.
Well, there's no.
It's real close.
It's really close. You're right. But it's close. There's no horse punch.
If he makes Red Wolf the sheriff in the next issue, then it's basically the same. And I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Oh, now I like it even more. And so then this is just, you know, the thugs come to town to kill Red Wolf, and. Because Steve has stopped him from being lynched, and he's going to try him because that's what Steve wants, you know, law and order and not murder. And Steve's got to dispatch some thugs, and he shoots one guy in the neck, which gets really bloody. And now some special mercenaries are coming to town. This is
now
led by Bullseye and some other people. But,
yeah, no, so is that Elektra and the Owl? And who's the bear guy?
Good question.
Is it the Owl, do we think?
I don't know. Could
or
be.
Is there another? No, isn't there another guy who? Ron, I'm looking at you on this. I'm looking for help.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I can't tell. I can't tell what the Western to Marvel Universe decoder is.
That's
definitely
Elektra.
Yes.
I think.
Definitely, I think.
And I feel like there's a character that I'm seeing in my eye is that guy in the bowler hat, but I can't place it as part of Marvel.
Well, it looks like the owl with those round glasses.
Yeah.
Hang on. I'm going to look again.
But this is also really great Western trope, right? The hired guns come in to take out the one good man in town. It's usually Clint Eastwood or Kevin Costner, and then they die. So I love this so much. So I'm glad you mentioned it.
I wouldn't
read it otherwise. 1872, number one, which is a great story. If you love Westerns, even if you don't love Westerns, Ron enjoyed it. He hates Westerns.
I never said I hate Westerns. It's just not as much as whatever.
Listen, if we say it, it's just we have to put you in a box. Get in the box and accept your role.
It's either you love or hate, Ron. There's no nuance anymore.
No in between.
No, that was the pick of the week. And actually, this was a week full of really fantastic books that I liked a lot. Of the 11 I ended up reading, I think probably 5 or 6 could have been pick of the week. And the big release this week was Archie number one, which I think a lot of people expected might be the pick of the week, especially since this is my week. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I didn't love it as much as some of the other things I read this week, but I thought it was fun. This is the Mark Waid and Fiona Staples realistic-ish reboot of the Archie universe.
Well, this was yesterday a mutual friend of all of ours IM'd me and was like, hey, did you read Archie number one? I was like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, I really liked it. It was really good. I was like, well, considering who's on it, it better be good. Like, if it wasn't, like the story would be if Mark Waid and Fiona Staples did something awful.
They punted. I mean, it was good. I'm an Archie fan, and this was a really fun issue, and I liked that it still felt like Archie. It was still familiar, but it was different in a modern way, and that was good. But I didn't blow the doors off. Maybe because, as you said, the expectations are this was going to be good.
I read it, and I don't really have a thing for Archie one way or the other. I thought it was pretty basic.
Yes.
I thought there wasn't much to it to get me excited. It was pretty baseline of what I thought Archie was about. I had a little bit of a thought in my head that I think Mark Waid is a really good writer, I was like, I wonder if this actually does sound anything like kids, because I don't understand anything what kids sound like, and he's older than me. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the thing that I think that I was like doubting its veracity, I guess, in a certain sense. But maybe they're not the audience. I thought it looked amazing, it looked great, but at the end, it wasn't very compelling.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was very, I don't know, saccharine the right word, or, you know, like, it was very
Archie.
You know, like, yeah, it was very Archie. And the thing that got me actually was the subtlety of the storytelling between what Waid asked Fiona Staples to do and what she actually did. You know, like the one page that got me is what, you know, like Archie's kind of inner monologuing, talking about why him and Betty broke up and how they're not talking. And in the background, Betty's behind him and going to talk to him, but then decides not to the moment he says, we're not talking. Like, it was like there were little subtle storytelling stuff that was done, again, in the way that only are done well in comics. You know,
it's a high level of craft, but I guess overall the plot didn't really interest me.
Yeah.
Well, this is going to be the saccharine side. We have this super dark Archie story in Afterlife with Archie's, and this is the main Archie book.
Yeah, I'm not even sure that that's not what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, this is what it's supposed to be. I mean, this is Archie. There's no more Dan Parent.
It's really interesting because I wouldn't think of Mark Waid as a person to do this. Like, he's a guy with a lot of range, obviously.
I thought you were going to say rage.
No, well, I mean, I'm not Arthur Soydum, but...
So here's the thing I have a question about. If you're Mr. Lodge, would you ask them to use a different photo for the giant poster saying you're about to arrive in town? Or did you ask for the one where you're glaring at everyone?
He doesn't deal with those kind of things, and his employees are, it's sort of a passive aggressive swipe at him.
Coming soon to Transform Riverdale, Lodge Industries.
I'm coming for you.
And it's like two stories tall. Yeah.
Well, I mean, have you seen some of Trump's photos?
True. I think it'd be great if he was a Trump-esque character.
That would be great. You know what? There's a really good possibility that can happen, I think.
Yeah.
So they kept the crown. I think there was a discussion at one point. Maybe it was a different reboot where they were thought of maybe giving him like a little fedora Jughead. But
that would be a prime example of an old person not understanding kids.
Right. Right.
So just keeping the crown is probably a better idea, because that would be a thing I could see a kid doing.
And it just doesn't make any sense anyway. You know, exactly. It's never really made any sense. So you might as well just keep it. But it was fun. I liked it as an Archie fan, and I'll obviously continue reading it. I'm curious to see what it'll be like after.
How does, and you might know a thing, so you don't have to say, but like, how is she going to draw this end saga? I know they're coming into a, like, is she supposed to be on this indefinitely?
Or
no.
No, I from what I remember, it was just this first arc, and it was scheduled out, you know.
And this is the saga hiatus just started.
Yeah, and I think that, and I hang on, where I gotta pull up the, because again I close it and then you guys keep talking about it. I'm very rusty.
I didn't say that.
But I don't think she did everything where she does everything on Saga.
Right.
I don't think she colored this. I'm trying to find the credits page.
That's not a small job. Is it like a McKelvey Norton kind of thing, or?
No, I just don't think she colored this, where she colors herself on Saga. So all she's doing was pencils, you know. And
I don't see a credits page.
Yeah, I don't see a credits page either. But I'm looking at the review PDF.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe on the actual issue.
Did you look at the so on the back of this they reprinted the first appearance of Archie.
Yeah.
From Pep Comics number 22, 1941. Did you guys check that out?
I looked through it. I didn't read it, but I was definitely interested in looking at it. I was kind of surprised at how, I guess, advanced the art was. I was actually kind of impressed by the, no, like it was pretty detailed, and it was pretty like good looking. Did they recolor it or something?
I don't know, but
oh, they must have. Yeah. According to Comic Book DB, there are two colorists on Archie number one. So Fiona did not color it. Mm-hmm. So
Archie had quite a different look back then.
Yeah, totally. So I mean, that was interesting. But as a piece, I like that they used to do those circle panels. They don't do those anymore.
No, those were fun. And call him Chick, please.
Yeah. Boy Chick.
That's just
Boy Chick. Can you would imagine like all of the kids in America has been like, what the hell are all these words? I learned so much Yiddish from old comics. And then the guys doing them were just like, what, everyone doesn't talk like this?
So also this week, Black Science 16, which according to the piece in the back, wraps up the first story arc of Black Science. And it ends very shockingly. And there's lots of people get killed, or
no one is safe in this world.
No.
Yep.
The cast we started this book with is not the cast we have ended this issue with. And that's
versions
exciting
of them.
Yeah. What did you guys think of this issue?
I liked it. I liked it as I've liked all of the issues. I like that it really does have that no one is safe feeling. And also I like the consistency with the theme that despite your best intentions, things are not going the way that you plan. And the more that you try to push it, you're just going to push yourself further off. I'm going to cure everybody on this world, and then they are going to, you know, they're going to take it the wrong way, and then somebody else is going to come along and fuck that up, and that has to do with what I did before. I really, ever since you pointed out the colors, I really miss Lilo Bridge on this.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, I gave a lot of praise that it was not undue to Matteo Scalera, but there's no doubt in my mind that those colors in the early ones really helped.
Well, the first colorist was Dean White.
Dean White,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
White. Yeah, it wasn't Lee. Lee's on Deadly Class. Yeah, okay. So it's, yeah, you missed Dean White.
I'm mixing up my amazing colorists.
Right.
When it's not Jordi Belair, I can't tell any of them apart. She's on 95% of the books. The others are doled out. Again, it's not even that it's bad color, but it there's definitely a, you know, Dean White.
There's an interesting exploration here of, no matter what you do, he fails.
It's great. You know,
I don't want to say it's an original sin thing, but he's trying to fix his life. He's trying to make everything better. But no matter what he does, something comes along and wipes him out. And this was a gut punch of an ending, because we talked about before how the main character, Grant, decided he was going to be a good guy for once and save the day. And he goes out and he does that. He saves the day. He cures this planet that his other versions of himself had poisoned. And he ends up getting back just in time to what he thinks is save the day, and actually kills the wrong person. And then the planet gets poisoned at the end at Nakoda, and it was repoisoned by somebody. And that's her, right? Like, different version of the girlfriend who poisons the world again.
The wife.
Is it the wife?
Yeah, the girlfriend has short dark or has dark hair.
Well, this is like a blonde.
Right, the blonde is the wife. The dark hair is the girlfriend.
The wife had blonde had dark hair too.
Listen, I don't know.
either way, no matter what, Grant.
But the daughter also has dark hair, so
right.
Yeah,
that was a little confusing at times too.
Well, I think it's supposed to be confusing at that point, you know.
It is. So, I mean, also yeah, there's multiple versions of the characters. The two versions of Grant have different colored hair.
Right.
So at a certain point, you know, this is just a lot of stuff moving around really fast. Those speed lines are indicative of the entire thing, and so I tend to just go along with it, and I'll figure it out later, even if I don't necessarily know the specifics from moment to moment. I sort of go with the motion of it.
So it's good. This remains one of his best books, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
It's my favorite.
So now they're gonna take a little break. They come back in November with the next with the beginning of the next major arc.
That's a long time.
It's a long time, but I mean, if it gives them time to recharge and to, you know, and give Mateo to do that sweet Mateo art, it's worth it.
So, I'm in favor of the breaks.
I'm too. I'm no problem with that.
Yeah. Likewise.
They always go fast too. It's always like, oh, it's back.
Josh, All-Star Section 8, number 2.
Yeah. So the last time this came up, I was like, this is going to be Pick of the Week. No way. And then it was not Pick of the Week. And so when it came out this time, I thought, well, maybe I will be way more into it. And I'm kind of not. Kind of not into it. And I think that we've talked about this. I think we're settled on the fact that you know, Garth Ennis is probably my favorite comic book writer at the moment. And one of the reasons for that is that his ability to sort of tell a long form story over a long time, whereas these feel really episodic. Like this is like last week it was Batman and then this week it was Green Lantern. And he might be putting pieces in place, and I have no doubt that there will be something at the end that sort of ties everything together, but it did sort of just feel like, one of the things I don't love that he does is, and I can take it in small bits, but like he's just bagging on superheroes. Like he likes to do that. And I don't know. I wasn't so into this. It was kind of funny, the bits with Hal Jordan and Sixpack trying to go after him. On the other side of things, though, I'm really, really enjoying the John McCrae art a lot. Mm-hmm. And I laughed very hard at Dog Welder again. Very
well. That was the best part for me. The issue was the opening with the new Dog Welder's origin, in which he's at a thrift store looking for knickknacks for his wife, and he sees the welding kit with the mask, and he's drawn to it, and the mask attaches itself to his face, and he immediately runs outside, finds a dog, and welds it to somebody.
We think. All we see are the sound effects. Ah, yip, 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 yip. Which is great.
I think we can infer that welding is taking place.
I just like how they did it.
I think the problem is that these are good background characters that show up occasionally.
Yes.
It's like the Lone Gunman problem run.
Yeah.
Remember when the X-Men spun, X-Files spun off the Lone Gunman, it's like,
yep.
Do we want to follow the fun background characters all of the time? And the answer is no.
Correct.
And I think that's the problem here.
Yeah, that might be it. And it really, like, honestly, it just makes me wish I was reading Tommy Monahan.
Right.
And that might be part of it. So, like, the tone is there. The voice is there. There's no doubt that it's fun. But it doesn't have that underlying anchor, I suppose.
Right.
So, you know, it's not bad, but it's not like this is my favorite thing ever. It'd be fun to have them. I mean, I'd rather just have them tell a past Tommy story. That would be really fun.
Right.
If they're going to spend all this time doing it. But it feels more like a lark, and so it's less enchanting for me, I guess.
Ron, last week you didn't know if you were going to read Lando, number one.
Well, I was going to say, just talking about the background characters not always being a good focus of a book is a great segue for talking about Lando, number one. So I was like, yeah, I'll take a flyer on it. So it's the next miniseries in the
– take a flyer means you're not going to read it.
Well, whatever. The opposite. Well, you know what I meant. Anyway, so Lando, number one.
I love having you back.
Written by Charles Soule, art by Alex Maleev. And so from on the art standpoint, totally fine. Alex Maleev doing well, not, you know, like not too photorealistic-y, but cartoony enough, you know, like it looks like Billy Dee Williams, but it's drawn in a way that is not trying to be him in every panel and that sort of thing.
It's clearly not stills.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Right.
But fuck this book and Charles Soule, who does not know how to write Lobot. And furthermore, I will say, doesn't know how to write Lando either, because – so I'm reading it, right? And so there's this great whole little thing. It opens up with Lando, who apparently has been sleeping with an Imperial governor, and she's, you know, beautiful but powerful, and he's basically there. She's a mark. He's trying to steal a thing, but he's conning her into giving it to him, you know, and that's a great little thing. And then – so we get that little sequence. Then the next scene is Lobot reacting – saying, "You did what?" And Lando says, "Take it easy, Lo." No.
Right.
Now I understand the
– Now you feel my pain about
these
other books.
Yes, absolutely. This is everything wrong with doing these Star Wars books. And now I understand that they wiped the slate clean and there's no more expanded universe and there's no more history and nothing's canon and all this stuff is canon. But you know, I'm going to go to the Presidio and I'm going to go to the people at Lucasfilm and ask them what the hell they're doing at Lobot, because he's a chatty Cathy in this book and Lobot doesn't talk that much. And then further, at one point, Lando says, "You had the Imperials put those things in your head so you could blah, blah, blah." The Imperials didn't put those things in his head. He was a slave in Cloud City, and that's where it happened. History means something.
Count. No, that history doesn't. That history's out.
Yeah, so I don't like this new history, so fuck them.
I don't think that I was that as vociferous as you. I liked the Lando parts, and I did like the art a lot. But yeah, I was like, who is this guy?
Oh, and also it had the.
It wasn't Lobo, Lobot. It was like Jay.
It wasn't Lobot. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And then it ends with, so they steal a ship and they're like, "Oh, whose ship did we steal?" I don't know, some Imperial. Turns out it's the Emperor's ship. But we get the. Do you remember that blue dude with the two horns that coming up like the from the Senate?
The Senate in the
prequels, like that guy, that asshole. I don't want to see that jerk. I don't
too
want
much
to be
prequels in these books. Too much.
Too much. Too much.
Too much.
Too much.
I kind of like that. That doesn't bother me. I'm like, fuck it, do it. Yeah. They stole the Sheev mobile.
Yeah.
What, my car?
I don't know. I'm just saying that there's Lobot is one of my favorite characters, and he does not talk in the way, like, A, he doesn't talk at all, but like the whole approach to it, I have no idea how that got through.
He shouldn't sit at the bar casually having a drink.
Exactly. And like, and then he's like,
"Wait, hold on.
Yeah.
Telling me something. Hold on."
Yeah, no.
I'm down with you with that. I didn't mind any of the Lando stuff. I actually liked that stuff.
Well, the Lando stuff was good, and I thought the art was really good. Yeah. And at the end, the drawing of the Crimson Guard was awesome, and you know, like it hit on some Star Wars notes, but Lobot was completely wrong, and it just ruined it for me.
I love how personally we take this. I love it.
Well, you know how much I like Lobot.
You know how much Lobot says? He doesn't. He points.
Nothing.
That's all he does. He points over there.
He's hyper efficient.
And he doesn't smile. He doesn't frown. Yes, exactly.
Maybe somebody fucked with his settings. Maybe something happens. Is this before? This is before Empire.
I get the sense this is before.
So maybe Sheev fucks him up.
Maybe, I don't know.
Aren't these all from before Empire? Aren't these all taking place after the first movie?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
No, this has got to be, who knows? I mean, this is before Cloud City, so.
Yeah, so it's got
to
be.
Yeah, it's got to be before Empire, but I don't know where it takes place in regards to.
I can't tell you that the Lobot implants thing counts, because that definitely has been changed. They can do whatever they want. But the characterization is
the characterization's all
it's
all
weird.
Off.
It's weird. It'd be like if Salacious Crumb was suddenly clever and chatty.
Yeah. And we Lord knows we don't want that. So
or EV99 was suddenly very kind.
Yes.
So Josh, one thing Batman Superman 22 lacked was a sweet bat beard. Which was present in Batman this week.
Is it true?
Yeah,
because Bruce Wayne's beard?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just wanted to go ahead and touch back. Like, I think that I really liked I actually liked Batman quite a bit this week, but we're not actually talking about that. We're gonna be talking about Batman Superman. And I thought that this was super interesting to see these two characters up against each other, two different versions of of themselves. I don't know what that is. And I just, it's been really fun to watch Greg Pak get all this time with Clark Kent and this new version of Clark Kent, which I found interesting. And I love how they don't like each other and they don't trust each other. But not for any reason, that they're just coming from different places.
I thought at first it was weird that Gordon wouldn't trust Superman,
but he's a cop.
But then I thought, okay, well, then Superman did fight cops last week, so that makes sense. Also, I decided none of this makes any sense.
None of this makes any sense.
In a general sense, so what the fuck?
Well, no, whatever. Exactly, but it is consistent with what's been happening.
Yes.
And, like, this is consistent.
But the idea of who Superman is in this world, and whether or not, you know, he's the Superman from before. That's the force of inspiration and aspiration in the world. It's not. I don't know if that's the actual Superman.
Well, I'll tell you. I'll tell you something. Go ahead.
I'm very confused because I'm reading the Justice League book and whatever, and he's in the costume and the cape and all that sort of thing. And then I'm reading this book and he's in the t-shirt and the jeans, and I'm like, okay, but this is before all that. But then Bunny Ear Batman is here, and that's happening now. I don't know.
Justice League is out of continuity. We're gonna get to that in the next segment.
All right.
It's funny because I can totally be annoyed with Lobot, but in this, and I recognize this is not, I'm like, I don't know who the Superman is. I don't know where he's coming from, but I don't care. Like, it's interesting to me. And if you're going to go this way, then make it go all out. And of course you want to have him meet Batman. And the fact that this book exists means that we don't have to wait 8-12 issues to establish that in the other Batman book, for what that is. And I thought it was consistent with the things as I have been reading them. Unlike the other Superman book that we read.
Superman might want to go with a less tight jean.
I'm going to assume there's some sort of spandex or flexible fabric in there.
Because otherwise he's not moving that as well as he should be, you know, could be. He's like, I can't bend over in these.
Yeah, he's definitely going to have super crack. There's no way he doesn't.
He's going to have the super belt to hold his jeans up.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's fun, but I just don't, I don't know.
I want to know where you're at on this. Like,
I can't anchor myself into the DC universe because everyone is so different in every book.
Okay, that's fine. But let's take that out. Okay, let's split it up though. How are you overall on where we are with Batman at the moment?
It's fine. I mean, it's a temporary story. I know that. And so I'm enjoying the interesting part of it. I know we're not talking about the regular book this week.
And
but
Superman,
the regular book was good, and the Batgate was awesome.
Yeah. And Superman. Do you rank that above or below Batman in the I like what's going on, I don't know what the fuck is going on?
I think Batman's very straightforward in what's going on. I don't think they've changed him all that much other than the kid, but the kid's ignored in the regular book. Superman doesn't make any sense from book to book. That's really the main problem. And Superman is the center of the DC universe.
Right.
It's kind of like if in Marvel, Steve Rogers was Captain America in one book, and he was old Steve in another book, and he was Captain Steve in the third book, and there's just no way to emotionally anchor myself to what I'm reading.
But isn't he the same guy in theoretically in Superman, and I'm going to just hope they iron that out in this.
Well, the
title Superman
right now is completely off. So.
And then Action Comics, and then is the same writer as Batman, so this is consistent with that.
I'm talking more of a more macro sense in terms of I don't know what this Superman means to this DC universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know what? You're right, because I don't know where it fits in the overall timeline of how long he's been Superman and how much everybody liked Superman and what kind of an icon he was in that world.
No one seems to like him.
Which is weird.
So,
because before the New 52, like, you at least had that grounding. I know where he was. He's going to go on a walk.
Right. It's like Lobot. You thought you knew who Lobot was, and now he's having a drink at a bar.
Maybe Lobot has, like, a business mode.
I don't know.
And so, like, when he's on, he doesn't talk. He points. He gets information. It's all relayed indirectly. He locks in. But then after he's off, he's good old low.
Good old low.
Good old low. Actually, I guess kind of despite myself, I've been enjoying Batman Superman in the same way that I'm enjoying
it. It's not bad. It's not bad at all.
Yeah.
My problems with it are not about the book's problems. It's just the general overall DC problems. I think this is a
good book. I get that. Yeah. I guess with DC now, it's like you were on a big iceberg and it just broke apart, and you just have to grab whichever little part of it you think you can hold on to and not sink. Which is actually exactly what's happening in Marvel right now, and most of them suck. Sorry.
All right, that's fair.
It really was like I keep starting Marvel books and being like, I don't care. Like I don't know what this is. I don't care.
All right. Well, if you care about us. And you're wondering about how you can help out and how you can support iFanboy in our endeavor to bring you this entertainment on a weekly basis, just go to your little – open up a web browser and type in iFanboy.com/support. There you can find all the myriad ways that you can help support iFanboy.com and keep the lights on, keep our servers plugged in, and keep everything working. If the easiest way and the best way that you can help us out is just shop on Amazon. If you go to iFanboy.com/support, there's a link over to Amazon. Any shopping you do at Amazon, we get a little piece of the action, as they said in Star Trek, and we would appreciate that. So next time you go to buy a graphic novel or a book or a TV, click on that link before you do so. If you would like to become an iFanboy member and show your dedication, you can sign up for $3 a month or $30 a year. It's very simple. There's a link there just to sign up for your membership. You do it all through PayPal. If you don't want to commit to a recurring payment, you just want to do a one-time donation, a link is there too as well where you can donate via PayPal. And we appreciate everyone who helps us out and keeps the lights on at iFanboy.com. We love you. So,
wait, so that phrase comes from Star Trek?
Yes.
Like originally?
A piece of the action. The diner.
It doesn't come from Star Trek. They used it on Star Trek.
They used it on Star Trek. It's a great episode. They go to a planet where everybody's all 30s era gangsters.
What the hell is Bloodstrike?
So Bloodstrike number one is Rob Liefeld's back.
Did I hit my head and wake up in 1994?
I know, but this is what's crazy is that it's complete. I would encourage you guys just to take a look at it because you gotta. I personally love Rob Liefeld. I love Rob Liefeld because he is just he is what he is, and he's got no shame, and he's full of energy and excitement. And it's clear looking at this, it's this Bloodstrike character. There's a character that's clearly Bloodstrike's clearly meant to be Deadpool. There's a character that's clearly meant to be Cable. He brought back Bloodwolf, who was originally clearly supposed to be Lobo. Like it just like he loves those characters and those designs, so he's just gonna keep using them. But this time he's cursing, and a major plot point is Bloodstrike's genitals are cut off, and that's a major point. And this is R-rated Rob Liefeld, which we've never really seen before. There are curses. There's like all wackiness, but it's crazy. So I give it points for being nuts.
And he's writing and drawing it.
He's writing and drawing it, and it's not him drawing and someone doing finishes or inking or whatever. It is him drawing, and you can see that he can still draw. I mean, say what you will about how he draws in the style or whatever, but it's good Liefeld. I mean, like it's good, like similar to Good Chaykin. It's good Liefeld.
I can't endorse anything he's been saying. I don't want to. I just don't want to see the eventual. You guys said. I want to make
one
sure.
One man's opinion.
Yep, exactly.
One man's opinion.
I embrace it and I enjoyed it because it made me laugh just because it's so out there. So good job, Rob. You keep making comics. So
I made Big Man Plans number one, my pick of the week. And the fourth and final issue just came out.
Well, you said it was getting more hardcore.
It got more hardcore. there was like a bit of a sense of humor to the first one. This was just, and they kind of said this in the end. There's a little essay, and like when we talked it out, and it was going to be really fun, and we were going to do it. And as we got into the last one, we were like, "Whew!" And that's kind of my review. It's really grim. These horrible people do horrible things, horrible. And then the killer dwarf comes along and makes them pay.
The killer dwarf sounds like a 1970s horror film.
Yeah, it is a little like that. It is, I mean, like, if this was a movie, I would be like, this is the most awful thing I've ever seen in my life. But somehow, something, when it's drawn like that, I'm okay. Because it's really, whew. So, I guess if that's...
So, overall, did you like it?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure. That's what I'm going to go with. I was really, like, at first, it seemed to have a dark sense of humor to go along with it. But by the end, it was just... revenge and torture and blood and gore. So,
and you're the guy that walked out on Saw.
I am. I am. And then they made 9 more of them. So I'm right there with popular culture.
So I'm in San Diego. I'm in an apartment with a bunch of people from my job. And we were reading comics on Wednesday.
With no pants on.
Before we head over to get our badges. And all of a sudden, throughout the condo, you just heard me shouting, "No, no, no, no." No.
I think I felt that.
And Justice League of America number 2 was the cause, and not
wait. Before you tell me the true cause, was it the soul patch?
It's not because of the soul patch.
For me, it's he lost me at the soul patch.
It's not because Superman's an idiot in this book. Like he is, they just seem to not like Superman. It's not any of those things. It's because Brian Hitch drew Bruce Wayne look like Ben Affleck.
No.
And I just started screaming no at the top of my lungs over and over and over again until someone came to see what was wrong.
It's a brave new world, Connor.
No! I don't accept this world.
Who's writing this again?
Hitch.
He's writing and drawing. That's this is his thing. Okay.
Well, you saw the news. You saw the Batman news that came out of the con, right?
I mean, that makes sense.
That Ben Affleck's writing it, yes.
Yeah, co-writing and directing.
Yes, well, yes.
Yeah, huh.
That still doesn't mean that they can draw him in the comics to look
Connor,
like
Connor, wait, Connor. Connor, Argo, but with Batman.
I'm not excited for that. I'm saying in the comic, you cannot do this. No.
Well, let me ask you a question.
But it's Hitch.
Can we ask you a question? Has Geoff Johns ever written a really great Batman story?
Batman Earth One.
Earth One, yeah.
Is that a great Batman story?
It's a very good Batman story, yeah.
It's very good. It's very good. Connor, but it's Brian Hitch. This is the guy who cast Samuel Jackson.
Yes, and what? No.
I just want to make it clear that at no point in Bruce's passes has his family owned slaves.
Anyway, no.
All right, well, moving on. Justice League United number 11. I have no idea what's going on in it. I just know the travel foreman drew it, and I thought it was pretty.
I was shocked to see you reading this.
I'm giving him shots. I'm taking the approach of the guy who wanders into the comic store after being
just jumping in the deep end. Like, let's just
like, oh, what's this? This looks interesting, and it looked interesting. I didn't understand what the hell was going on in it, and I don't understand anything. But
DiMatteis?
No, it's Jeff Parker. Jeff Parker.
Oh.
This is the one that was meant to be the Canadian one, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I don't know, but it had a trouble.
Hey, when did Jeff Parker start writing it?
Yeah,
I guess with this issue.
But it wasn't good.
It was good. I just didn't know what was going on.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm a little interested now.
I'm going
to
be.
If you said Jeff Parker and Travel Foreman to me, I'm gonna look.
Yeah, it was all right. It was all right. It was all right. And then finally, checking back into the Secret War Battle World stuff, a whole bunch of them came out this week. But Age of Apocalypse number one stood out, primarily mostly because whereas 1872 is different because that is somewhat original. Mm-hmm. It's just taking the idea that there used to be Westerns in Marvel or whatnot.
Right. Mm-hmm.
With a lot of these, like Civil War came out and they got Lanil Francis Yu to draw it, but the story wasn't that great or whatever. But a lot of these more recent ones – the art choices go a long way because they can either put you in the mode of that story or take you out of it. Because a lot of these moments in Marvel's history, Marvel's time, have very visual, kind of references. Age of Apocalypse, famously drawn, kind of the lead book was drawn by Joe Madureira, and Chris Bachalo had drawn some of them, and so like it's got that kind of like mid '90s Madureira Bachalo kind of look. Gerardo Sandoval, the artist, totally nailed it in terms of look, and it felt like an Age of Apocalypse book, and it was great to see Fabian Nicienza writing something again in an area that he knows a lot about. So I enjoyed this one. It was fun.
That build-up did not end the way I thought it would.
Oh, why? How did you think
it was? You did a good job of reversing my expectations.
Yeah. Well,
you sound like you're building up to tear it down.
No. It was good. It was what I expected. It did not disappoint.
Should we go back to talking about Lobot?
Whereas the Civil War one was just a mess.
Yeah, so, anyway. I didn't finish it. I didn't get very far at all. I was like,
Do you enjoy the messes?
It was rough. No, not in a good way. I enjoy I enjoy a good mess in a good way, but not in a good way.
So. I started it and I was like, oh man, I barely cared about Civil War at the time. I have no interest in revisiting this.
Yeah.
That's basically where I was. I was like, I don't even know if it's going to be well done or not. I just don't care.
Whoa, slow down, Lo. Let me tell you how it's going to work, Lo.
Now, when you do it in the voice, I like it a lot more.
Don't abbreviate Lobot.
Well, what have we?
Well,
you can't take a whole book down because of one word.
Yes, I can.
You can.
Oh, yeah,
I
just you can.
I
mean,
no. I just
yes,
did. You can. Yeah. I just did.
Yeah.
I took the whole book down because of one panel.
Yeah.
Well, that was an overall style
decision.
It wasn't
even a word. It was silent.
Yeah. Did you finish reading it?
Yeah, I finished.
Yeah.
Sad.
Classic.
I couldn't believe what was going on in that comic for a variety of reasons. We'll talk about that next time. Yeah. Those are the books we're going to talk about this week. Go to fanboy.com. Find a post for the show. You can talk about these books or other books. And talk about Lobot if you want.
I like that there's a lot more to talk about. We're not going to do it.
Listen, I will do a show dedicated to Lobot if there's enough audience hope.
Ron, Everybody knows that you would do a show dedicated to Lobot.
Your
willingness to accept a podcast on a very thin standard is the premise. Is not a question here. There's nobody out there like he wouldn't do that, would he? I mean, if anybody knows, I know.
This week in Lobot.
It's a very short show. Mm-hmm. It's First email comes to us from Wes A. from Newport, Minnesota. And Wes says, I'm facing a bit of a crisis with the reboot of Miles Morales. First, a bit of history. I loved the first volume of the Miles Morales Spider-Man series. It had an interesting new character taking up an established mantle and making it his own. The short-lived second volume had some issues, but and while it was enjoyable, it is also a bit of a mess. Now that Miles will soon be Peter Parker's apprentice, I find myself not that interested. I don't want Miles to be a Spider-Man. I want him to be the Spider-Man. Anything else just doesn't feel as interesting to me. Have you ever come across this feeling with the character's new direction? Am I just one of these seemingly boom of new readers or readers who growing tired of the big two? Any thoughts would be welcome.
I'd love
Ron, I think this is where you would bring up Lobot again.
Well, clearly, Lobot talked too much in the issue.
That's the whole show. It's just an hour of you just saying, making that point over and over again.
Listen, Lo. Yeah, he's never going to be the Spider-Man.
Yep.
Sorry.
Well, he was.
I mean, he was. And that,
no, he was the Ultimate Spider-Man. He was.
It doesn't. But Spider-Man. In his world as he exists, he was the Spider-Man.
And yeah, so we're talking about the Marvel world.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. I know. And I see what you're saying. And I think what you've got here is a bit of a Not My John situation. They've taken your Miles and they put him somewhere else and it changes it. And now he's not your Miles. And I don't know that.
But it's still Bendis writing it. And it's and I mean, I don't know.
It will be Dan Slott writing it, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I saw this whole move as they want their cake. They want to have their cake and eat it, too.
Yes.
Well, can you imagine if they had taken that one character and gotten rid of him?
Oh, I know. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I don't think they should.
I think he's a great character, and I think it's excellent. I think, you know, and it's great. But, like, the thing is that as much as there are people who want Miles to be the Spider-Man, there's a whole bunch of people who believe that Peter Parker is Spider-Man.
Well, here's the thing that's interesting about that, because if you look at, say, Captain America, when they brought in a new Captain America, they took Steve out of the picture, or at least drastically changed what he was doing. They either made him Captain Steve or they made him Old Man Steve. They got him out of the way. There wasn't two running around together. When they took Dick Grayson and they made him Batman, Bruce Wayne was gone. Yeah. And I think there's something to that. Because I hadn't thought about it. I don't know anything about what's going to happen, but I don't think I'd be interested in that either. It was more fun to watch Miles crawl around the world and try to work it out for himself, completely feeling he's overwhelmed. If he has a Spider-Man mentor, it's less interesting. Yeah. And I also, I have been super disconnected from Peter Parker for years now because I haven't really been into Dan Slott's work, and he's been writing Spider-Man since...
1974?
Apparently, I think so, something like that. And so, I don't know. I feel like Peter Parker really has been in this. He's just been boring to me for years and years and years, or at least repetitious. In the same problem they have with Clark Kent, in a way. So I thought it'd be interesting if they sort of got him out of the way or shuffled him off to a different role for a while. But you're right, that would piss people off too. But
he's also the face of the company, literally.
No, I know. Well, yeah. Well, the mask is.
Yeah, but the mask is the man. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like Miles too, but. In the Ultimate Universe, it was an expectation that they could do anything to any character.
Yeah.
And that's different when you start messing around in the regular universe or the quote-unquote
real one. The fact is, that thing that you liked is over. And now there is a new thing that is derived from that other thing. You might not like it. And that's just the game.
Comics? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's you and Hellblazer.
Yeah, totally. And,
Yeah, exactly.
You got...
The thing is that I guess the biggest thing is that it hasn't happened yet.
We don't know.
You don't know what it's going to be like. So clearly you liked it. You like the creator. You like the character. You like the creator who created the character. The same creator is doing the character. Give it a try. Maybe you'll like it. Yeah, and be thankful that they didn't obliterate him.
Not my Miles. Hashtag.
Yeah.
Hashtag not my Miles.
All right. Our next email comes from Jonathan O. from Burnsville, Minnesota. And he says, my fiance is a bookworm and reads a bunch of classic novels. I've introduced her to a couple of comics that she's enjoyed, some classic DC like Identity Crisis, and we've been reading Saga together. Identity Crisis is classic DC?
We're old, Ron.
A long time ago.
I'm a big DC fan, but I've realized looking back at the other crises that no normal person could pick them up and understand them. Correct. I'm not sure what the next thing is that I should suggest. She's mentioned Bitch Planet. Is that a book with strong female character and smart dialogue? She's recently watched all the Buffy episodes. Are the Buffy comics worth investing in? What recent books have your female counterparts enjoyed?
Okay. I don't want to answer this. No. Okay. First of all, this is really interesting. You're saying strong female characters, and then you're also mentioning Identity Crisis, which is like the most reviled book of all time by the people who are creating the other books you want. I just think that's interesting. Yeah.
You don't know that it's reviled by people who make those other comics.
No, I know that it's one of those things that they put a touch.
There's a group of fans that hate it.
They put a touch. I've seen it written about a lot. It doesn't matter.
There's a group of fans that hate it. There's certainly a lot of bloggers that hate it, but you don't know the creators.
Anyway.
Get my point.
Recommendations.
I don't like the idea of this book is good for women and this book is good for men. As a general rule, I think good is good is good. That being said, there are so many classic stories that you can pick and choose from historically, you know, that we could all just pick like our favorite things you could read. Like go get New Frontier right now. Just get that. It won't matter, man or woman, whatever. That's great DC story. If that's like a one thing that you want to do. I hear that Bitch Planet is great. I haven't read it. It doesn't make me a sexist. I wasn't interested in the creative team more than anything else. So, Buffy, I think, is a wonderful suggestion. You guys really like those books, and you don't have to wait 3 years for it to be finished.
Five.
Was it that long?
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah.
But it was consistent, right? I mean, for the most part.
It was good. It was the season eight went 5, 6, 7 years, or something like that.
Yeah, it went way too long. Yeah.
I would disagree slightly with you, Josh, because I do know a lot of women who read comics, and they do, for the most part, want to read female protagonists.
Okay. Yeah. And that's fair enough.
I'm not generalizing. I'm just saying the ones I know, they read all kinds of books, but they, in general, are looking. They look for books with female protagonists.
Well, I think so. In that case, I think we're missing the obvious one, which is clearly David Finch's Wonder Woman, right? Isn't that the part of the kind of book? No, Bitch Planet is good. I can attest, Bitch Planet is good. I think that also, I mean, the new Batgirl probably might be one, you know, depending on age and interest and that sort of thing. And maybe the new Black Canary too, which is supposed to be pretty good.
Or Ms. Marvel, or
Ms. Hazards. Marvel as well. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so Ms. Marvel or what's the other one? The other Marvel, Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
Yeah,
that's changing creative team.
But go back and get the original Captain Marvel Volume 1 by Kelly Sue DeConnick and I forget who the artist was on it, but yeah, go pick that up and if you want kind of a more superhero kind of thing, you know, I mean, has she read Watchmen?
A lot of rape.
I know.
I mean, that's the thing about Alan Moore.
Yeah,
a lot of rape. But if she liked Identity Crisis, she might be cool with that.
Well, yeah, and there's a female protagonist in it. I mean, she kicks ass at some point, you know, at points,
yeah,
you know.
She's
so
also
yeah,
a bit
I mean,
of a,
it's yeah. So
she's a bit of a damsel in distress needing rescue.
A little bit, yeah.
I wish I had better answers. Honestly, it's a thing that I don't know.
Well, no, I think that being in the middle of the two of you, I think you both made good points. Josh, your point is that, you know, good is good and go read, you know, something that we all know is great. And what I always do when people want recommendations, I go by what genre they like, you know, like what kind of movies do you like? What kind of TV shows?
Right, exactly.
You
know, that's the best way to go.
But Connor does have a point that, I mean, and I think it's fine. I mean, like women want to read about women that you want something that you can relate to and connect with. And so
I probably would not recommend the new Princess Leia book. That instance. Let's take it back, I guess, and just say that she likes Buffy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that being said, what would you suggest? She likes Saga too. So maybe Why the Last Man's a really good thing to look into.
Yeah.
Because that is a very
I would say to check out Bitch Planet. I would say to check out Sex Criminals. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's closer on the Buffy spectrum. Mm-hmm. Than anything else in terms of just the characterization and talking that sort of stuff.
Like what she bought. I mean, like a Preacher. Read Preacher.
I would go back and tell it. I would say get the collections of Astonishing X-Men.
Strangers in Paradise.
Wow, we haven't talked about that book before.
I know, yeah.
Wow,
go, and
we're off our game.
You want something that will, I mean, she likes classic novels and is going to get caught up in the whole world and everything. Go that route. Absolutely. There are tons of volumes of Strangers in Paradise and very, you know, very Whedon-esque in terms of the characterization and that sort of thing. Yeah, go for it. That's my suggestion.
Oh! There you go, Jonathan. Finally, we got a question for Josh. David G. from Worcester, Massachusetts says, I was inspired by Josh's comment at the end of the most recent episode about Worcester, which, as a lifelong Worcester resident, perfectly sums up our driving in the area, to ask a non-comics related question. What's your favorite New England accent to imitate? Is it the classic Boston one? where the H's at the beginning, the words mysteriously disappear, and the R makes an A sound. The Kennedy, where everything is very serious but full of a lot of filler words. The Vermonter, or does any of the use of the word wicked as an all-purpose adverb tickle your fancy?
I'll tell you what, the only New England accent that I like is none. I'm sorry. I know the question was for Josh. I'm sorry.
Listen, the only tri-state area I like is go fuck yourself. How about that?
That's all of them.
Very recently, I met somebody and they asked where I was from, and I said, oh, I'm from Long Island. They're like, oh, but you don't sound like you're from Long Island. I was like, yeah.
You've never been to Long Island then.
North Shore.
Listen,
on the North Shore, we're a little more.
even if you're not saying all the words the way that you used to, there's a rhythm. There's a cadence. There's something. I've seen this guy. I don't remember what comment I made about driving a Worcester. I've seen him. He commented on it on the thing.
It was angry driving.
Oh, okay.
Angry aggressive driving. This is an old email, so it was a couple of episodes ago.
Maine. Because it's the one I know best, and it's a little different than Boston, Massachusetts. I can't do Boston, Massachusetts. Like that Matt Damon, Ben Affleck fake one. I can't do that one. Wicked is a wonderful all-purpose word, and I stopped using it like after I got out of college because everybody pointed out that I was using it, and I felt like a complete rube, but I've tried to bring it back in. Wicked fucking cool guy. It's different than Mass. I can't do Mass, but I can do Maine because that's what my whole family sounds like. But not me. I talk like the people on TV, and I always have. No one's ever been like, you have a Maine accent. I would just say wicked, but in a perfect northeastern neutral.
So do some Maine for the people.
Well, we used to do it when we did Arthur from Maine. Remember?
Yeah, I remember Arthur from Maine.
I remember I saw an article the other day that was about somebody was making fun of the fact that they were going to announce having lobster rolls at McDonald's in New England. I was like, they had fucking lobster rolls at McDonald's in New England my entire life. There's nothing about it that's fucking new or weird or anything. They're like $6. They're for fucking tourists.
There you go.
Oh, man.
Good job.
Josh, I thought of you while I was watching Jaws last weekend.
See, that's Massachusetts.
I know.
Okay.
I still thought of you.
I think there's probably a lot of people who think of me when watching Jaws.
Is he allowed to think of you?
Yeah.
All right.
I know. Do I know what scene you were thinking of me in? Because I think I do.
Which scene? Yes, exactly.
And because I don't want to have a lot of insider jokes that people don't know what's going on, I'm going to explain this. Back 10 years ago when I got married, my wife and I went on vacation to Hawaii. And then after the fact, my two friends here told me that they had seriously looked into getting me one of those swimming with sharks.
We were going to do it.
Yeah, no.
We were this close.
Swimming with sharks packages, which I would not have done, by the way.
You would have wasted our hard-earned money?
Uh-huh. I wouldn't even do, you know, the thing that's been going around where people watch Jaws like in a pool.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Oh no.
I
that's insanity.
So it got to be a thing where I said, I would look just like Richard Dreyfuss in that scene when he sees the shark and he's underwater in the scuba mask and he just covers up his face and his eyes get big. And or Hooper.
No, it was
from the Oceanographic Institute.
The
muffled scream. Underwater, no one can hear you scream. Actually, that's aliens in space. No one can hear you scream. But the aliens tagline was based on Jaws, Jaws in space. So that's why I relate them.
All right. So if you've got any questions about accents or sharks or anything.
It's pretty much the same thing as a high-pitched Bane. Yeah.
Like if Bane was walking around and saw a spider. And he doesn't like them.
What does that sound like?
It sounds the same.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, so you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. That's 1-888-326-2697. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and keep the voicemail short, people. All right, cool. Real quickly, if you like the sound of my voice, you can also go listen or watch All About Android on the Twit Network at twit.tv/AAA. And hey, you got to watch it live because you never know what might happen, because last week on the show, I had a little run-in with Larry Wilcox of Chips fame. I'm just saying. It was epic. So go check.
It sounded like you got in a fight with him. Had a run in with him. Like you're Larry David, and it was like you were on the street and you gave the wrong tip.
The best is if you look at the Facebook post that it came where he's like, okay, chime in on what? Like it just sounded so annoyed. Anyway, oh, Larry Wilcox.
This week, Ant-Man comes out at the end of the week, and we will be doing a special edition podcast on it. Ron and I, and possibly another guest, will be talking about Ant-Man, so you can check that out. It'll be coming out. Possibly the day the movie comes out. We're not sure yet. Depends on all the screenings we're juggling. But you can look forward to that this coming week for Ant-Man. It's getting good reviews.
Okay, fine.
It's got like a 60 or 65 on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's
currently.
That's not good. So, yeah. That's just okay. Yep. Head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. You can talk about this week's books. You can find out about all the other podcasts that we have had in the past and the old video shows, and everything is still there for your enjoyment and quote-unquote information. Follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter. You'll be able to see all of the weird stuff we say. And then you can find out what the pick is ahead of time as well for things. And you can follow us at J.A. Flanagan, C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ron Exo.
And if you like the show, write a review on iTunes, or better yet, tell your friends about the podcast.
Tell your friends about the show. Just tell them.
And we appreciate that. That's how people find out about the podcast, is through reviews on iTunes and through word of mouth. And we always see people recommending us on Twitter, and we always are very appreciative of all those who do that. So thank you for helping spread the fanboy love all around.
About 5.5, 6 inches.
We should bring back the Frapper map.
Frapper's gone. Long gone.
Let's restart it.
Just
if you think about it, that was like the dumbest thing.
Yeah. It was basically where are you from? Like it was a way to people represent, you know?
It shows visually where people are. That's what it does, you know? Like if I'm here, there's a pin right there, it's where I am. You're somewhere else.
I'm saying it's a nice feature. I don't know that it's a business.
Yeah. That's fair. I'm Ron.
I'm Josh.
I'm just fucking Josh.
I said it in the accent, but my name does Joshy. That's
it. There you go. I'm getting out. No, nothing ever shames me. I'm going out. I don't care if you're angry.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.